Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy whatever day this comes out on. Welcome to a very special bonus episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
And happy bonus day, Beth.
Happy bonus day, Amelia. So no, folks. We are not talking about February 29th for a leap year or anything. No, that is a bonus. Don't look at me like that. That is a bonus day. To February, which is the best month of all.
To February. So today what we're talking about is listener ghost stories. We had so many of them. We decided to compile them all together and give them to all of you as a bonus episode. Should we just dive on in, Beth?
Are you going to keep singing like that?
I might.
And speaking in a staccato.
We'll see. Style. We'll see where the day takes us.
Okay. Yeah. Let's dive in. You're going right from the top?
Yep. All the way from the top. So our first story comes to us from Tom from Pennsylvania, and Tom is our only listener to give us a ghost story every season, and he was cutting it close this year. We are more than halfway through October, but we got one. Tom writes, "Hey, Amelia and Beth, thanks for another great season. As always, I'm really enjoying this season, and there were a couple that really resonated with me. These two stories take place when I was 4 or 5 years old, living in Detroit suburb of Hazel Park. I was outside playing with friends, and my mom was in the house with a friend of hers who had always been into psychic and paranormal stuff. I honestly don't remember her so much, but my mom filled in some of the blanks for me. Anyway, she and my mom were talking about ghosts and guardian spirits, and she said she felt a really strong presence when I was in the room and got the impression that it was some kind of aboriginal man, possibly from Africa, but definitely tribal. About 5 to 10 minutes later, I came running in through the screen door on my way to my room with the conviction that only little kids and cats have when charging from one room to the other. My mom grabbed me by the arm and stopped me and asked, 'Tom, what does Albert look like?' Albert was my imaginary friend. I would talk to him, invite him to dinner, play with him when everyone else was busy. My immediate response to her was, 'He's a big black man with a spear.' And off I went, because what I was doing was way more important than that adult stuff. The second account happened around the same time, maybe even that same summer. I was outside playing again and heard my mom's voice say, 'Tommy, time to come in.' I could hear it almost like she had said it right in my ear. I told my friends I'd be right back and went inside and blasted through the door. My mom was right there and she said, 'I was just about to call you.' I said, 'You did call me.' She said, 'No, I didn't, but wash your hands. Dinner's ready.' That's all I have time to jot down right now, but I have a neat 3-perspective story about New Hope, Pennsylvania coming up and a ghost hunt on the 30th of October. Thanks as always, Tom." Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. That's really neat. Send us another message after your ghost hunt and let us know what you found.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to hear all about New Hope. I'm down there a lot.
So moving on to the next one, our next story comes to us from Christina. She writes, "Hi, Amelia and Beth. Barry Corbett gave me your information and wanted me to share a story with you. On October 31st, 2010, I went to a public ritual in Salem. Lori Bruno, the high priestess of my coven, was helping to officiate the New Year's ritual with name redacted. Unfortunately for me, I was running late and therefore didn't come in time. The inner circle was closed, leaving me to be on the outside in the public circle surrounding the inner one. My friend Mary and fellow coven member saw me on the outside. She asked me repeatedly to come into the inner circle, in which I refused. You see, once a circle is closed, no one can join into it unless the high priestess opens the circle to let you in. And on Samhain, the new year, the veil between the worlds is the thinnest. So it's just not okay to walk into an already closed circle, especially on Halloween. So to my surprise, Mary grabbed my shirt, pulling me into the circle. The whole time I was telling her no. Anyways, after that, I continued to be in the ritual in the inner circle. I had a great time in Salem and went home that night. The next night, while I was at work, I used to work as an overnight CNA at a nursing home, I get a text message from my boyfriend. He writes that the doors are opening and closing on their own, and my dog is freaking out. I called him thinking he was messing around, and he answers completely scared. Then he tells me that he could hear a little boy's laughter. He hears something and hangs up on me. I couldn't reach him the rest of the night. When I got home in the morning, my boyfriend explained about doors opening and closing as if someone was walking through them. My dog was barking and growling at something and hearing laughter. A few nights after that, it was my night off, and I was watching a movie in the living room, and my boyfriend was in our bedroom watching football. Next to the living room is the dining room, and there's a waiter's door between the living room and the kitchen. The waiter's door has always been open and flush up against the dining room wall. So when I heard some noise and looked over, I saw the door was closed. I thought maybe the movie is too loud for my boyfriend and turned the volume down. I yelled, "Sorry, honey," I turned it down, and I went down to watch the movie, but a little while later, I heard a noise again. I looked over to the door, and it looked like someone was pushing it from behind, but not completely. I said, "Sorry, honey, I have it all the way down. What more do you want?" Then the door opened at a 45-degree angle, and no one was behind it. I yelled, "Leave this place." My dog that was next to me started to bark, and his head was following this thing as it rushed by me, and I could feel a cold breeze hit me. After it was gone, I saged and blessed my home. But a week later, while my boyfriend and I were sitting on the couch, he noticed the dog leash that we hang by the front door was swinging like a pendulum. Unfortunately, I couldn't see it from where I was, but it stopped quickly. Several mornings later, I woke up to noise coming from the kitchen. I went there and saw three of the upper cabinets were open to exactly 90-degree angles, and three lower drawers were open, perfectly aligned, as if you could draw a straight line. Then something told me that this thing wanted to communicate. So I thought about it, and my logic was that if a spirit was once living and can move objects, then surely it can write. Later that day, went out grocery shopping, but before we left, I left a note asking what their name was with two pens. When we got back, he answered with the name Josh. The paper was static clung to two pens that were stuck into candles on the table. So every night after that, I was asking questions and getting answers. It was a 10-year-old boy that died in 1954 and was born in 1945. He was looking for his mother. Unfortunately, I couldn't find her. And even if I did, I'm not sure how I could explain. Also, the house was getting heavier and heavier, and Josh was clearly depressed. There were days I would have a great day and be happy, but the minute I opened the door, instantly I felt extremely depressed and even suicidal. Of course, I knew it wasn't me, but I felt that Josh really did need to cross over. So I did a bit of research. From what I found, they say that spirits are here because instead of going to the light, that they go away from it. And according to the tradition of witchcraft I practice, they say the dead go to the west. So the next morning, I woke up early and went into the living room. I said out loud to Josh, "I think I found your mother. She's in the light." And I pointed to the west corner of the room and said, "There." Then I felt what I call touching heaven. It's like the best bliss you can feel times 10. I told Josh, "Please close the door behind you." And then it was as if that feeling was completely taken away, and I cried. The house's heaviness dissipated, and after about 5 minutes, the house was back to normal. I never felt or saw objects move after that, and I'm happy that I was able to help this poor soul cross over. Thanks, Christina.
Good story.
That was a great story. Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, that was good. So our next series of stories comes to us from Dan from New Hampshire. Dan has a lot of great stories for us tonight, and he also runs and owns Renaissance Massage and Body Work up there in New Hampshire, and you can book an appointment with him or learn more by emailing renaissancemassage@myabmp.com. That's renaissancemassage@myabmp.com.
I do just want to point out, Amelia, that it's spelt differently than Renaissance is typically spelt. This is spelled R-E-N-A-S-C-E-N-C-E.
CENCE massage.
He writes, "Dear Amelia and Beth, first, I just want to thank you for creating a podcast devoted to New England, which is easy to listen to, unlike others where I've lasted a minute or less because the people can't seem to stop giggling over stupid little things, like just saying hi during the introduction. Plus, I learn a great deal. You've helped pass the time during work for many hours on end. Where do I begin? As I mentioned briefly before, I'm an INFJ, HSP, empath with seemingly medium tendencies. Yep, that's a heck of a trifecta of rare traits in an overwhelming world. Couple that with Reiki and being a licensed massage therapist, and I've opened up a great deal of things within me to make me, well, unique. For the sake of brevity, I'll keep my stories as short and to the point as possible, but as a writer, I tend to get crazy with detail and tangents. My very first doctor in veterinary medicine used to be driven up the wall because my histories were too lengthy and wordy. Plus, I've had over 4 decades of experiences. So here it goes. I know demons are off your list, so I'll just share this briefly just because. What scientists call sleep paralysis, in my case, I will respectfully decline that label. 2 nights that will stick with me forever, along with the voices that to this day I can still hear in my head, just like it was yesterday. The first being something holding me down and whispering in my ear, "You know, you really pissed us off today." Then there was a growl, like a groan, but pleased with itself as the pillow partly under my head was now being pulled onto my head. The fear of that night hadn't died when 2 nights later, similar events, but different voice that chuckled while adding, "Here we go again," like a taunt. And again, the pillow was moved, placed over my head. It would be weeks before I slept all the way through a single night again. To branch off from your episodes of phone calls and emails, I have 2 short incidents. One was when I was young and I'd forgotten about it until this morning. I was always told not to pick up the phone during a thunderstorm or I'd be struck by lightning. During one storm in particular, the phone rang and I ignored it. It rang again. And it just kept ringing. So I figured it must be important. The voice on the other end said, "Get off the phone." To this day, I have no idea who or what it was, since none of my family owned up to it, nor was it any of their voices. The other was when my great-grandmother passed away. I was so fortunate to have known her, but not like my mom, who spent many days learning the old ways of Poland from her. My great-grandmother always told my mother she'd find a way to let her, my mother, know she was okay. Sure enough, in the middle of the night, my mother received a phone call, clear as day, and my great-grandmother, in her Polish English, said, "I okay, it's beautiful here." That being said, tangent alert, I was thinking when you folks were speaking of answering machines and whatnot, I can't help but think that some machines that were more mechanical needed more energy than our newer electronic models. So perhaps that's why the clarity was more garbled than the today's EVPs. Tangent alert number 2. In your episode, Mid-Orange Correctional Facility, regarding dowsing rods, fun fact, my grandfather used dowsing rods when they needed a new well dug. And yes, he found it. And when the men were digging the well, said there was nothing, he said, "Keep drilling." I think he said this twice, and sure enough, they found the spring. For years growing up in Connecticut, I lived and drove down a road named Hell Hollow Road. Of course, you can't have a broken down back road with a name like this without having some ghostly history, right? New England has plenty of Indian stories around, and this road does too, on occasion. But more notably, there is a Confederate soldier who at times can be seen standing, or in many accounts, actually seen running into the woods alongside passing cars. While I have not had this experience, I do recall one day in particular in which I looked in my rearview mirror to see someone jump across the road from a running start. I've seen plenty of animals over the years, deer and whatnot, but this was something vertical, like a human. Not horizontal, walking on 4 legs. This road sees hardly any traffic, so I put the car in reverse and went back to see the spot I saw the event. Nothing to be seen or heard, but the vision in my rearview mirror was clear as day. The most historic legend of this road, by the way, was about a little girl named Maud. More notably, Maud's grave. There are different stories associated with this legend. In my mom's teenage days in high school, the stories went that Maud was a witch. Yet, how a girl of only 9 years old could be considered such, I don't know. If you drove on this road and you spoke her name, your car would stall and you'd be unable to start it for some period of time, or worse yet, die in a fiery death. Apparently, during her high school days, story has it, at least one group of kids met this fate with no survivors. And yet the actual story, the one I personally believe, is that Maud was a young girl who died having choked on a piece of apple. Her family moved to Rhode Island, I believe, but her true grave is unknown. A pile of rocks on the side of Hell Hollow Road is supposedly the place, while others say the original headstone was stolen or destroyed. Still others say that the grave is elsewhere, and this is all legend. I add this story only because it has paranormal roots, but I, myself, thankfully, have never had an issue on that road except enjoying the ride and fishing the nearby water.
My mother was a teacher of 42 years, I believe. One of the schools she taught was built upon an Indian burial ground or somehow close by. In short, the ground was disturbed. She hasn't had the same kind of experiences as me in life, but she oftentimes spoke of a lady in white, an old school marm she described as, who would sometimes be in the doorway or in the room and give an approving nod in my mother's direction. And on one occasion, my mom did the same as a gesture of common interest. She said she always knew when the lady was around by feel after that. The school had many structural issues, like cracks and leaks in the rotunda from the day the doors opened. My personal experience was stopping in to say hello one day and seeing an Indian warrior in the corner of the room. His arms crossed, he stood watching, but not threatening. I say he was a warrior because he stood strong and proud, not appearing as a medicine man or shaman, but rather of protection and watching over those in that room. In some ways, this made me feel better knowing she and the kids were being watched over and not frowned upon for the intrusion on the ground with the newly built structure. While working at Tufts Veterinary School, one of my jobs was to bring the bodies of deceased loved animals to the morgue. On one occasion, the collie I was carrying passed by me, not running, but not walking, a gentle trot, I guess, excited to see where we were going. On another occasion, a golden lab was my deceased patient. He ran past me on the walk down the long corridor, seemingly excited to see where we were going. I still to this day remember him cocking his head to one side when I placed his body into the large cooler, and then as I was walking away, kind of like, wait, that's it? The hospital was divided down the middle by a large corridor for the large animal side of the hospital from the small animal side where I worked. On a few occasions, I had a horse follow me, close enough to hear and feel his breath, and later discovered not only his name from descriptions, but his history. That's one of the cool things about what I do, confirmations. One of the reasons I left Tufts was because I was still learning about what was wrong with me, and at one point knew when patients would die, but couldn't tell how or when. One night in particular, we had two codes, and both dogs passed away. While leaving, I told a coworker who was hoping that was it for the night we worked the second and third shift. There would be one more. Sure enough, the next day, she informed me another dog had passed away and asked how I knew. So because I felt so helpless, it was time to move on.
Most recently, in the house we bought, I knew the owner of the house had horses at one time, but the previous tenants nor my family had. And yet, walking out to our gardens, one particular stayed to my left shoulder as I walked out. And when I walked back to the house, it would stand behind me with its two front legs on the large rock in my backyard. When I finally asked the owner if any of this sounds familiar, there was a pause. She sent me a picture of the horse, explaining that this is how it would wait for treats when she got home, waiting by the rock and looking to the double doors for her to notice them waiting. Again, confirmation. At a friend's house years ago, she asked me to stop over one night because she was also an empath and felt the presence of a little boy who did make an appearance. But there were two others. One I described to her, and she asked for specific details about the woman's clothing, like her apron in particular, and what she was doing. Her eyes got misty as she told me that this was her deceased aunt. The other was a man in flannel, who became very sad when the young son came into the room. The man clearly was moved and watched as the boy walked away. I described him and mentioned how he was sad because he didn't get to know her son very well due to a sudden death. Cardiac, I thought. It was her father, and shortly after her son's birth, he passed away due to a heart attack.
While working in hospitals, you can well imagine all the things that go on in there, and it isn't like they smudge these places. Even hospitals that began as homes, like one of mine did, and morphed into the large facility it is now. While working at UMass Memorial, I assisted someone in bringing a person down to the morgue with their belongings. I stopped by a stack of lockers, which I thought were for safekeeping of belongings, but I felt overwhelming confusion, like not understanding why people come and go but leave. Come to find out, these were the lockers where the deceased babies were kept, like mini morgues. Same hospital, different facility, while visiting with a security guard friend looking for answers, who was also an empath, we were visited by many spirits from the cancer facility, several of which we confirmed to each other without leading into descriptions, strictly blind observation, and at one point she helped a little boy to cross. As he did, the stormy day that enveloped us that day suddenly had a break in the clouds that lit up the room we were in at that precise moment, like when your eyes are shut and someone shines a flashlight at you, and then stormy again. Coincidence? Only he knows.
My grandfather had passed before my son was born. He and I were close, and in some ways I carried a lot of guilt in that I could have been a better grandson in many ways. Anyway, my son was a little over a year old, I think, and he was resting on my shoulder looking to my left. I felt my grandfather's presence and said, "Nick, where's Gramp?" He picked up his little head and looked right in that direction, and not just looked, but looked like he saw something there. While working at Newton Wellesley Hospital, I used to take care of surgical instruments late at night, bringing them to the storage room with the other operating room supplies. Night after night, I kept having this woman yelling at me, screaming in fact, telling me to get out and the like. Finally, one night when I knew I was alone and wouldn't be overheard, I asked her to stop and why she was yelling at me. Why was she so mad? She stopped, maybe surprised I was addressing her, acknowledging her presence, and said, "Botched surgery." Told her I was sorry and wished I could help, and she seemed sad. I asked why mad and now sad, and she said, "I miss my daughter." I never did find out who she was, but I wish I could have found her daughter. From that night on, I was met with a smile, and I greeted her each night to let her know I was just putting my instruments away, but letting her know she wasn't alone. Never a problem afterward, only that several other spirits made an appearance. Apparently, word got around. While working as an EMT in Massachusetts, my partner and I were assigned to a station coverage at an old firehouse. I took it upon myself to try to connect with any firefighters that may be lingering, since I always felt a presence. I didn't dare go into the basement since the floor was being held up by a stack of cinder blocks, and I didn't think the building was really rated to be holding our ambulance, but such is life. Using my phone's voice recorder in the basement, I asked if any firefighters were still there, were chiefs, to which I found, after listening, a voice that answered, "Oh yeah." Like, matter of fact, kind of like, "Oh yeah, we're just hanging around." At the signing of paperwork for my grandmother's will, I distinctly felt a presence to my right standing next to my mother. I closed my eyes and in my mind greeted the presence and asked who they were. They responded with the name Kathy, my mother's deceased baby sister, telling me everything would be okay. I told my mom, and when I described her to my mother, she got misty-eyed, saying that was her, and my grandfather used to say with their curly hair they could be twins. Mind you, I've never seen a picture of her or know if one exists, as she died shortly after birth.
While living in Westminster, Massachusetts, we had several events in that house built in 1951, one of which was a little boy named Peter. He loved my son's electronic toy piano and would play it whenever he felt, so it seemed. One night, my mother was visiting. She was laying down on the couch, lights off, and he began playing, so she asked him to please stop because everyone was asleep. The piano playing stopped, and a few seconds later, she felt a little breeze on her cheek, like a kiss goodnight.
There was an older couple there, and at different times, I could hear the older woman singing to my baby boy and him singing with her. Once, my older stepson came flying down the stairs in tears and hid under a blanket. Moments before that, I saw a foot as if someone walking upstairs, and I knew who it was. He then told his mother he thought it was one of us coming up, and then saw a woman in the doorway of the bedroom, but he was alone up there. My wife is well aware of what I can do, so she asked me about it to make sure it wasn't something serious. Nope, just a visitor, and a surprised one at that. There was a young couple who always appeared dark, almost black silhouettes. I never did find out what that was about. There was also a skittish, playful gray border collie that hung around an old rocking chair we had in the basement. When I described the dog, my wife told me she knew that dog. It was her aunt's. Neither of whom I could possibly know nor ever mentioned in conversation until I saw the dog teasing me, wanting to play, but clearly not wanting my interaction. On moving day, and after court battles with our slumlord that was trying to evict us a few times, I was packing the last of our belongings as much as I could into the back of my truck. I was mad, angry, feeling defeated, but glad we were moving to New Hampshire. The lights downstairs weren't great, but fluorescents never are, not even on a good day for general health. I had at one time wanted the old house to be ours and to not have to move once again, but in retrospect, he did us a favor. As I'm packing bags, boxes, etc., the lights wouldn't come on. I knew Peter was at the bottom of the steps, clinging to the banister, watching, and my heart was breaking. I'd had enough and started speaking out loud, but then said, "And if someone could please fix the lights so I can be done and leave, I'd greatly appreciate it, please and thank you." As a few tears found their way down my cheeks, Peter ran up and the older couple came down just as the light went as bright as it could, and I lost my composure. I think I uttered a raspy thank you. But as I shut it off one last time, me and my witchy ways gave one last blessing to the house and the memories, one last goodbye, and a thank you to the spirits we were leaving behind. I didn't mention the thing in the crawl space because, again, I know you don't deal with demons or whatever that thing was. Plus, I'd rather remember the good things about that house.
These days, I work at the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services Virology Department for COVID Response. There seems to be no shortage of shadow people walking around. Some days, weeks, more than others. At times, they are down the hall at a distance, other times right behind, and pass by when I run around the corner. Most are dark in nature, like black silhouettes. Only once did I see a white figure. As always, I like confirmation. So one day, in amongst conversation, it had been mentioned by a coworker, she was unnerved while walking through the basement. Without skipping a beat, I mentioned the shadow people that crossed the hallway, where no doors are present, and she gasped. "You've seen this too?" "Yep." And I told her you get used to it after a while. Or a lifetime. Wow. Only 10 pages. I guess I'm either losing my touch or forgetting a lot, but that's been my life in a nutshell. More like a pistachio shell than a walnut, I'd say. Hope this helps in some way and gives you something interesting to read, if nothing else. And being that you like Salem so much, might I recommend a stay at the Salem Waterfront Hotel and Suite and dining at the Witch's Brew if it's still there. Say hi to our friends at the Cabot Kent Hermetic Temple and the Cabots over at Enchanted, as I know Amelia was to have a reading there a few months ago. And if you have the opportunity, I'd recommend joining one of their rituals. Even if you don't believe, then at least for the experience, as they are lovely people to be around. And if you find yourself in Hillsborough, I'd be honored to have you book an appointment with me. Take care, be well, and I'll catch you on the next podcast. Sincerely, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Those were all great. Terrific.
I just want to go back to your hang up the phone early on in your stories. I remember as a kid, that was a popular prank call to make to people in your neighborhood during a thunderstorm. So it might have just been some neighbor who also was familiar with don't pick up the phone during a thunderstorm. So just an idea.
Yeah, but that's fascinating to have just a lifetime of these great stories. And thank you so much for sharing a little bit about that with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. Our next series of stories comes to us from Marie. Marie is listening tonight with her mom, Janet, and her sister, Liz. Hey, ladies.
Hey.
Thank you, Marie, for sending these to us and getting two new people to listen to the show. Folks, I'm just going to throw in a plug here. Make sure that you tell two friends about the show. That is your task for ghost hunting in New England over the season break. Tell two friends and ask them to tell two friends. Ooh. Hello, ladies. I love binging your episodes while I work in my pottery studio. I started from your very first show and I'm on episode 42 as I write this. It's been very informative and entertaining. 5 stars. I'm one of those haunted people that Jamie Day has talked about. I also didn't realize that I was the magnet. I just thought I was predisposed to picking haunted living quarters because I grew up in haunted places. Like a learned behavior, if you know what I mean. So it took a while, and some friends to say something to me, for me to wrap my head around it all. Some of my family members have had experiences and sensitivities that they kept to themselves too. It's a hard and scary thing to be by yourself growing up like that. And I hope to be the vocal person that the kids can talk to because it's so sad to think we have to keep feeling afraid and crazy. I had a therapist send me to a medium to talk to once. No joke. Bless that therapist. Anyhow, the first experiences I had were when I was very small, like 3 or 4. And I would wet the bed because I didn't want to get up and move past all the skeletons and dead people around my bed. Then I wrote a story about my dead grandmother that I read to my mother about how grandma lost her mind, and mom told me to never read it to my father. It turns out she had terrible postpartum depression after my aunt was born and was overly protective to the point of paranoia. The first real full-fledged haunting that I can recall in more detail, though, happened when I was 12. It was really terrible. It was not human. I know you guys say you don't do demons, but I thought it was worth writing down and sharing with you. Here it is. My first major experience was when I was living with my mom in a townhouse just after my parents' divorce. The townhouses were brand new, and I was really excited because I got my own bathroom, and we had 2 stories, which was not really a thing in Arizona. Most of the houses I grew up in were 1 story. We don't really have cellars or attics, so I was excited to have stairs. Here's the part that I always hate to mention because it sounds so completely made up, but it's true. Archaeologists found archaeological evidence of indigenous life where our townhouses were built. I remember my mom talking about how cool it was and how the archaeologists documented it, then covered it over and built our home right on top of it. Anyway, I was 12 and was doing the best I could with the divorce. It was not exactly a great time in my life. My parents were both a bit unstable, and my school life was not great. One night, while I was laying in my bed, I heard someone breathing right over me. It was awful. I felt worse in my bathroom, like someone was right next to me and angry. I was so excited to have that bathroom, and I was terrified to be in there. I started asking my mom if I could sleep in her bed with her, and she let me. One night, I woke up in my mom's bed to a huge boom. My mom wasn't there. She had gone downstairs to sleep on the couch because I had been kicking her so much. We both ran to each other at the top of the stairs and walked to where the sound had come from, my mom's bathroom. One of my mother's glass shower doors had been shattered, but not completely. There was a huge hole in the center of it, as if someone had punched it violently. It was made of that sort of glass that shatters into little even pieces like car glass. And she yelled, "What have you done?" at me. I don't think my mom knew how to deal with the situation and assumed I had done it. I don't remember anything after that for that evening. My mom got a boyfriend and he started spending the night a lot. He had a little black and white television that he gave me and I would stay up to watch Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. I always tried to fall asleep to The Tonight Show so that I didn't have to listen to the breathing over my face when Mr. Carson was done and the sound would stop. My mom's boyfriend got me a puppy. I named him Puppy, poor dog. I had no idea what to do with a puppy, but he was sweet and fun. I had a lot of time by myself in the house. We would spend hours downstairs in front of the television. I tried to never go upstairs. There was a door on the stairwell, and I always tried to keep it shut. On my last day at the townhouse, I was watching television, and I heard Puppy let out a loud cry from upstairs. The door on the stairwell was open. I called to him from the bottom of the stairs, but he wouldn't come down.
I got all my courage together, went up the stairs one at a time, hoping that Puppy would come down before I got to the top. My room was at the very top of the stairs. When I got to the doorway of my room, Puppy came running out, his tail between his legs and a little bite mark on his back. I looked into my bedroom and one of my porcelain dolls was standing up on its own in the middle of the floor, facing me with her hair standing on end. I ran down the stairs, grabbed my dog. The television and the radio started to turn off and on. The door on the stairwell started to open and shut at the same time. I ran with Puppy out of the house, and as soon as we were out of the front door, the deadbolt and the doorknob locked us out. I didn't have the keys to get back in, but I really didn't want to, frankly. I ran next door to use the neighbor's phone and called my sister to come pick me up. I told her about the whole situation, and she asked if I wanted to burn the doll. I just cried. I had no idea what to do, and I was just a kid, but I refused to ever go back. My mom kept living there, and she said that she finally started yelling at whoever was running up and down the stairs in the middle of the night to quit it, and they did. I remember my mom returning my dolls to me when she moved, but somebody in the family got rid of them. Thank goodness. Sorry, Will. I do believe what was going on was I was being targeted like a living human child predator targets a fragile kid. That thing, and I do mean thing, decided I was easy pickings, and I was. What's weird is that it didn't follow me. I also get the feeling it just didn't want me around. It didn't want any of us around. I have more stories to send you, and I'll send them soon. Take care, and like you always say, happy hunting. Red heart shape. Sincerely, Marie.
Thanks, Marie. Those were spooky. And Will definitely would have been upset you didn't send those to him. So she
with a black and white TV and Johnny Carson, those dolls may have been gone before Will was born.
Probably. Mm. Okay, so she did end up sending us more. Hi, ladies. This next account is one of the hardest to write. It was a very upsetting experience, and it's been difficult to try to research. Even now, I keep going back to the information about the Pueblo people and what they've been through in little spurts because it just hurts to know how horrible it must have been. I only glimpsed for it as a second as a kid, and it really left its mark. I hope I'm not bumming you ladies out. The more I write about my experiences, the more I realize how scary and sad these are. It's been really good for me to get it out and tell people about these experiences. So here it goes. When I was 16, my dad took me on a road trip through the Four Corners area to camp and visit as many ancient Native ruins as he could fit into the two-week trip. I had not been telling him about my hours of meditation every day or that I was regularly traveling out of my body to see how far I could go on the backs of birds in the front yard as they jumped around from the ground, testing myself to see my ability to connect was accurate when I opened my eyes. I was not telling him that I was experiencing a lot of things. Also, I was intentionally staying away from reading anything. I had this idea that if I read something about how to explain my experiences, then I would not be able to know for sure where my experiences were coming from. Was it something I read or something I really experienced without influence? So when my dad took me on this trip, I wasn't really reading anything about where we were going. I didn't know about the trauma of the sites, and I certainly did not want to hear about it from an overly wordy dad. I would shut him down with a huffy teenage girl response when he would start. So after a while, he just started with, "Okay, we're here." Most of the time, I would see nothing much. I remember seeing a young woman down in a room that was built into the ground of Chaco Canyon while we took a tour led by a woman named Elsie Joe. I'll never forget her because there were animal faces that kept popping up out of her face. Anyhow, this ancient young woman was looking at all of us from this room underground that was open now to the sky in all of our prying eyes. She wasn't really there, but she was. She wasn't an apparition, but I could see her. I don't know how else to put it. I've been told that I'm a medium, but I haven't really been comfortable with that until recently. It was really intense when I was 16 and meditating all the time like I was. The big one, though, the experience that made me go into hysterics was on the Pueblo. It was a nice day, and my dad did as usual. "Okay, we're here." I think he asked if I wanted to know anything about the place, and I said I didn't because that would mean he would go and do a long diatribe. I also wanted to walk through it by myself because I didn't want him talking to me through the whole thing. Oh boy, what a moody gal. So I waited until my dad had walked through on his own, and then I started into the mission. I can tell you that the very first thing that happened is I felt like I was being watched. My pace slowed down significantly, and the walls began to take on a very different look. They began to look as though they were melting, and then I could see where fingernails had scratched into the adobe walls. I kept walking forward, and even though I was feeling more and more upset, and as though I was walking towards something terrible, when I got closer to the spot that felt bad, I was sure that 100 pairs of eyes were staring at me from the cracks in the adobe walls. And then it happened. The roof was on fire. I was choking on smoke and burning alive, surrounded by hundreds of people who were also burning alive, and the room was filling up with their screams. They were clawing at the walls, and they were all gone, and I was alone on an empty mission. I was not on fire, but I was quaking from head to foot. I ran through the rest of the path, hysterical. I stopped on the path only when I was standing under a huge tree across from the building, and what seemed in my memory like a good 50 yards away. I just stood there and shook. My dad was in the visitor center when I found him. I asked the lady who was working there, "What happened there?" She said, "To punish the natives for killing the priest who was buried in there, they locked them in and burned the roof. Everyone died." I only saw a moment of the atrocity. The feeling of real ugliness and evil I got from the man who was buried there, the priest who they killed, I hope I never feel again. In researching this now as an adult, I found out there was a statue recently erected to one of the men responsible for these atrocities. To me, this means enough people don't appreciate how wrong it was. I burnt alive with the whole village for a split second, and I will never forget. Your friend in Tucson, Murray. That was tragic, Murray.
Very. It's making me think of the scene in Game of Thrones where Daenerys goes in where all the calls are together and she lights the whole place on fire. It's very, anybody who's seen Game of Thrones remembers that, but unfortunately Amelia hasn't.
Yeah, and this actually did happen, which makes it even that much more horrific.
It made me wonder if the Game of Thrones situation was based on this. So after that, Marie actually went on to give Amelia some tips for harvesting natural clay.
Thanks, Marie.
And then she sent another email. "Hi, I have a couple of things to tell you about the things that happened in Kansas City. Here's the first one. My apartment was pretty nuts. My poor friends. I have really put them through it. The first apartment I got in college, I shared with my best friend from freshman year. We will just call him Ken. He was sweet and kind, and we really got along. I picked the apartment out because he was going to be late to show up to campus. I thought it was a real steal. It was on the fourth floor of an apartment building, I think was built around the 20s or 30s, on the corner of 43rd and Warwick in Kansas City, just down the street from our campus at the Kansas City Art Institute. The apartment had wood floors, two bedrooms, a really cute balcony looking out onto 43rd Street, and an ample living room. The bathroom had a clawfoot tub, which I loved, and the master bedroom had carpeting. Being the first to get there, I got the master bedroom. Ken didn't seem to mind, but that didn't last. His smaller bedroom in the back of the apartment began to have a bad feeling for him. He started having nightmares. Then, Ken told me one morning that he woke up in the middle of the night and a man was standing outside his window, staring at him. This was terrible. Not only is it bad to wake up to someone staring at you, but there was nothing for anyone to stand on four floors up outside of Ken's window. He wanted to move out, and I couldn't blame him. The apartment had an ADT security alarm. I later found out that the other apartment in the building did not. Anyhow, I would arm the alarm every day, and when I would come home, it sounded like people were walking around the inside of the apartment. I lived on the top floor. The apartments ran from the front to the back of the building. The only other apartment I could be hearing would be the apartment behind me, which was unlikely, but maybe. Of course, when I got my cat, I became more convinced they were in my apartment because Lindo, my cat, would chase them around the apartment. I would come home, go to unlock the door, hear what sounded like two sets of feet running across the apartment, and then hear my cat goes chasing after them, yowling. He was a big talker. I started to get really depressed and refused to leave my apartment. My friend, we'll call her Mary, came over to check on me and realized that I was really stuck by something in there. She was brought up in her mother's Celtic tradition and her father's native tradition, so she suggested that we cleanse the apartment. I had gotten to be very good at out-of-body meditations as a teenager, and I knew how to see, but was scared. She promised to go in front of me through the apartment and create a safe space. We were 19. A friend of ours, who I will call Tom, an atheist, said he wanted to be there to just see what happens. I told him that he had to respect the situation and be completely passive. He agreed and sat on the floor across from me while I went into my trance with all my protective crystals around me and my salt circle around me. I should have put the same around him. To this day, he refuses to speak about what he experienced. He was terrified when it was all over. When I went out of my body and walked into my bathroom, I met a man and a woman. In the flash of moment, I saw their entire life's histories individually, and then I saw it. He stabbed her to death in a fit of rage in the bathroom. Then, in total despair at what he had done, he slit his wrists. He was still there because he did not believe that he deserved any peace. She was still there trying to comfort him and get him to forgive himself. It was terribly sad, and I had no idea in my 19-year-old self what to do with it all. I walked through the bathroom to the back bedroom because the two bedrooms were adjoined by the bathroom. As soon as I got into the back bedroom, the landscape changed. There was an endless field of concrete and a spinning office chair with a baby in it. Every time the chair circled around, the baby's face changed. It was not a baby. It was grotesque and terrible. I ran back to my body and clung to myself, extremely glad to be back and away from that thing. I looked over at Tom, and he was staring at me with eyes as big as saucers. Jackie said she got to the closet in Ken's old room, and when she began the blessing, she was overcome with fear. Then something inside the closet growled at her. That's when she left the room. I don't blame her. We may have been gifted, but we were 19 years old and certainly not child prodigy gurus or anything. As you may have guessed, after that night, things got worse. I didn't want to be alone. The footsteps were constant, even when I was home. I started locking myself in my room with both doors to the living room and bathroom shut. I slept with the lights on, with the covers over my head like a little kid. In the bathroom, the sink mirror had little red splotches of red paint all around it, and it creeped me out. And one night, I was typing on my typewriter, yeah, that relic, sitting on the floor in front of the door to the living room. I heard two sets of feet walk up to the other side of the door and stop. Then two voices began to whisper against the door. I don't know what they were saying because I ran to the bathroom door to get away from them. Lindo ran toward the whispering, so I know he heard them. Then the whispering began on the other side of the bathroom door. Lindo ran to the bathroom door, which I promptly ran away from. If it wasn't for having Lindo, I might really think I was nuts. I didn't like to be alone there, so I had a couple of big parties. I gave people Sharpies to write all over the walls. Yeah, I don't know why either. Art school? Anyway, when I moved out, I got a full deposit and the management company sent me a really enthusiastic letter saying that if I ever wanted to move back in, I would be welcome to anytime. I think they knew how bad it was in there. Years later, I was walking with a boyfriend down 43rd past the apartment. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't know how he would take it. He stopped and pointed directly up at my apartment and said, "I used to live in that apartment. It's haunted. It was awful. There was a murder-suicide in the bathroom. Some guy stabbed his wife to death. We didn't know it when we moved in, but my roommate lost his mind and threw red paint all over the bathroom." Side note, a couple of years later, I moved into an apartment around the corner from this apartment. I had the window open one night, and when I was on the phone with a good friend, I heard a man and a woman calling my name from what I thought was the street outside, but I couldn't see anyone. My friend on the phone sounded terrified, and I asked her what was wrong, and she said she heard something growling. She had no knowledge of what happened in the first apartment. Take care, and like you always say, happy hunting. Marie from Arizona.
Whoa, good story.
That was a great one, Marie. Thank you so much for sharing that.
That was great. That's what a great one to end on.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm surprised this only took us an hour.
That was amazing. I can't believe it. Wow.
Amelia put it all in one big file together. This is actually 28 pages that was written by all of you guys. So thank you so much for sharing. And thank you, Amelia, for putting this all together.
You are so welcome. And thank you, everyone, for sending that in. I can't get over that last story Marie sent us. That was great.
Right?
That was really good.
And the idea of like the boyfriend used to live in the same apartment.
Exactly. Yes.
Like, talk about like how like attracts like, right? Like just people, like
the weirdness of the universe.
Yeah. We all find those people.
Did you ever hear the story of my parents' orange Volkswagen?
No.
My parents, before they had met, my dad had to sell an orange Volkswagen, and without meeting my mother, sold it to my mother like 2 years before they met.
Isn't that wild?
Huh?
That's kind of funny.
They drove the same car. They had never met.
Hey, you know, things happen.
Craziness of life.
I was having Sunday dinner with my sister-in-law and her partner over the weekend. And he was telling me that he had owned a house down in Hingham years and years ago. No, not Hingham, North Quincy. He owned a house in North Quincy years and years ago. And when the tenants were moving out, you know, he went to check on them and, you know, make sure everything was fine. And the woman was, you know, just beside herself. She's like, this place is haunted. There's a little girl that wakes me up in the middle of the night. She stands at the foot of my bed. It's been going on for years. I have to get out of here. And she handed him the keys and she left. Like, she was finally able to leave. And he was like, well, that's good to know, but I'm not really sure what I'm going to do about it.
That's wild.
A funny guy.
Cool. Well, thank you everyone so much who sent in stuff for us tonight. We really appreciate it. Good bonus episode, Beth.
Excellent bonus episode, Amelia.
And as always, listeners. And as always, you can find us online, ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter at ghosthuntingne, and on Instagram at ghosthuntinginnewengland. Send us your drive-by ghostings, ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. And as always,
support small business and happy hunting.